I like being female, and I have never felt even remotely bad about being female. I don't know if that's because I've always steadfastly avoided women's magazines, which I think are just designed to make you feel bad.
Journalist Molly Ziegler-Hemingway speaking at the Issues Etc. Making the Case conference.
But I've always known that being female is pretty awesome. And the only time it actually occurs to me to even feel remotely bad about it is when feminists start telling me that I'm doing everything wrong. And I think it's so interesting that feminists have such a problem with these traits that we do associate with women a little bit more. Feminists are on this campaign to make women more like men.
You can listen to Molly's presentation, Making the Case for the Differences Between Men and Women, and teachings by Paul Meyer, David Menton, Will Whedon, Chris Roseborough, and Jonathan Fisk on an audio DVD from the 2015 Making the Case conference. We'll send it to you for a donation of $300 before Labor Day. Just click the DVD logo at issuesetc.org. I know that this has happened to you. It's happened to me. You're going through social media. The news feed is scrolling by and you see a story that catches your attention. You're excited. You have to share it with somebody. Before you know it, you have. And then you realize that the story is 5 years old, or you realize that it's not a real story. You didn't check where it came from. And it comes from one of those websites that perpetuates fake news or even less than accurate news. It's happened to all of us. Why does it happen, and why are Christians particularly susceptible to these evangelical fish stories, as they're sometimes called? Terry Mattingly is going to join us here in the first half hour to talk about that. I'm Todd Wilkin. This is Issues Etc. Thanks for tuning us in live this Thursday afternoon, the 20th of August. A little bit later, Dr. Russell Moore will join us. He's authored a new book called Onward, Engaging the Culture Without Losing the Gospel. We're going to talk about Christianity and culture. Terry Mattingly is our first guest. He's Senior Fellow for Media and Religion at the King's College in New York City, author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate, and founder and editor of GetReligion.org. Terry, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Glad to be here.
Why are evangelicals in particular so susceptible to believing fake or recycled old news stories in social media?
Well, I think there's two levels to it. Number one is just human nature, which is, and especially in the internet age, where the internet, the one thing the internet does better than it does anything else is divide us up into very small, very deep, self-replicating niches. We just love to read things that validate our preconceptions. And that's just as guilty. People are as guilty on the left as they are on the right and whatever. So there's this human tendency to pass something along to other people that you already know this will get a rise out of them. I mean, we all enjoy doing that. And the internet has made that easier than it ever could. Now, the second layer of this, though, is that I think it has to do with conservative, morally, culturally, and religiously conservative people in America feeling angry at the mainstream press and cut off from the mainstream press. So thus, one of their overarching beliefs, and we can get into a discussion of the degree to which this is true, because I've been running a website for 11 years that digs into these sorts of things, you could make a case that they're right that they are cut off, and you could make a case that the media may not be interested in what they're interested in, may not view the world the way they view it, and then this leads... Sometimes this begins to grow into a paranoia where you're convinced they're hiding things from you. Now, on one extreme, you have, like we're all watching right now, this national debate of why the mainstream press isn't covering the Planned Parenthood videos. And anyone who has studied media bias studies related to social issues like abortion, same-sex unions, etc., knows that the press on these issues tends to be particularly biased and leans more toward advocacy. We call that Kellerism at Get Religion, after a famous quote from Bill Keller days after he retired as editor of the New York Times, when he said to an audience in Austin, Texas, that the New York Times was not a liberal newspaper except on certain social and moral issues. And, of course, we live in a day and age when the most divisive political issues in American life are social, moral, and religious. So I think there's a two-part layer there, but you want to know what's really scary is if you stop and think about it, why have we always referred to preachers' stories with kind of a sneer? You know, those kind of anonymous, they came from somewhere, and if they're not true, they really should be, stories that preachers are known to come up with late on a Saturday night when they're short of inspiration. In other words, within our culture, there's this tendency to say that preachers don't so much make stuff up as they tell kind of semi-mythological anecdotes that seem to have come from somewhere. Years ago, more than a decade ago, I'm scared to think how long ago it was, I judged a contest from the Evangelical Press Association, and I was stunned at the number of articles that began with anonymous anecdotes. So I think there's a tendency among certain types of religious believers to really want to believe something is true, whether it stands up to hard research or not. So what's your reaction to that?
Well, let's see. Isn't journalism the I mean, I'm talking about the journalist's job. Isn't that the antidote to the reader or the viewer that he knows at the other end of the story wants to believe what he wants to believe? Isn't the journalist's job to essentially serve as the remedy to that bias?
Well, I mean, they're supposed to check it out, or at the very least, they're supposed to let both sides of these issues debate whether a set of facts, you know, so that you watch the attempt to verify the fact play out in front of you. If it, you know, if a certain opinion or a certain fact can't be verified completely, you get to watch the journalist investigate it and then kind of read the quotes from both sides and make up your own mind. But of course, we live in an age where journalists are increasingly deciding that certain issues don't have two sides. They only have one side. This then feeds the paranoia among the people whose voices are being left out of the stories, the people whose views are automatically assumed to be wrong or even worse, bigoted, at which point those people are sitting there on the internet going, well, why in the world would I trust traditional journalism? I'm going to believe this or get a load of this thing that just showed up in my email, this. And they have a tendency to assume the mainstream press is automatically wrong, which makes anybody who's selling a story different than the mainstream press automatically right. That's a recipe for disaster.
Now, give us an example of this, if you would. I mean, I think everybody kind of has experienced this. They've been suckered into one of these things.
On the internet. Why did you say 2008 in your introduction?
I think I was just pulling a date out of the... This has happened to me so many times, Terry, where I see something, I click on it, I'm like, oh my goodness, this just happened, and then I've learned now to go up and look at the byline.
I thought you were so subtly referring to the fact that me having to admit it, get religion, that I got caught the other day and should have been caught and confessed my sin. I fell for one of these shortly after the Supreme Court 5-4 decision on same-sex marriage, where this thing shows up in my email, and it was a link to a USA Today story, and the version of it that someone sent me did not have the date on it, except, of course, in the tiny little print of the URL. And it was a story about a Michigan man who was supposedly suing two giant Bible publishing companies. And it turned out that he did sue them. It was thrown out immediately because it was crazy. But he sued them for producing editions of the Bible that exposed him to public ridicule, hatred, paranoia, etc. Now, this is one of the keys to what we're talking about, is this fit what people wanted to think was going to happen after the Supreme Court decision? That the minute this decision was made, we were expecting to see more things filed against florists, more things filed against bakers and wedding cake makers, more stuff may be filed against Bible publishers, you know, and other blatantly traditional Christian companies, industries, whatever. So it was sort of what we had reason to look for. But the version I had been sent and that I read initially and then just cut and pasted the URL into an item at Get Religion failed to note in the fine print of the URL that this story was from 2008. This thing went viral all over the place, and this led to an essay at Christianity Today by the internet maven and evangelical thinker Ed Stetzer of Lifeway Research, in which he used that particular episode as a launching pad to kind of talk about why are Christians so prone to falling for this type of stuff. Meanwhile, back at Get Religion, I admitted my error, and I left the post up kind of as a confession to my error, but also to point out that ironically there were several things in this story from 2008 that we might be reading about here in the near future, so I ended up kind of doing a mea culpa, but at the same time, you know, telling people to watch out for this type of coverage and see if this thing got repeated. That's a famous example. There's all kinds of examples. Let me give you a typical one. I've seen the variations on this story, and Ed Stetzer, in his Christianity Today piece, mentions this. This is not an easy time to be a military chaplain. And some of the things that have gone on in the military have been genuinely strange. They have been an offense to people who believe in equal access laws in terms of various types of religious believers, everything from Pentecostal to pagan, have some right in military bases to celebrate their faith, to observe their faith, etc. What's getting to where it's possible to believe anything that could be said to happen to punish a military chaplain. A lot of the new military regulations leave tremendous discretion on religious issues up to local commanders. So here's what happens. So somewhere in America, you know that old saying that something about religion in China is true somewhere in China?
Yeah.
We're kind of like that right now with the military. Almost anything that you could fear in the U.S. military is true somewhere, but that doesn't mean that it has been approved and become military policy. So let's say there's a story out there, and a military chaplain gets in trouble for witnessing to somebody, for telling someone that homosexuality is a sin, for, say, it's an Orthodox priest who, by his vows, can only give prayers in the name of God the Father, Son, and Holy Spirit, you know, according to his vows. And there's this one case out there where somebody gets in trouble, and somebody takes that story and then acts as if this has already become universally accepted military policy. And there are even journalists who are careful enough to say, this is just one case, but this is an example of something that could happen based on the following regulations. Somebody sees that story, doesn't read it carefully, and the next thing you know, this thing has gone viral at what Ed Stetzer calls the angry Christian websites. That this is now military policy. Not only has this happened, and it turns out it's being looked into by military officials, and it's usually overturned or something, but all of a sudden this is presumed to be universal. Now, I want listeners to understand that I'm also aware that there are very real accusations by the Southern Baptist Convention and a host of other conservative groups on whether or not military chaplains of traditional religious beliefs are suffering problems being promoted or having their careers run full length. Those are really serious issues, and I have seen serious coverage of those issues. I've also seen serious, balanced coverage of some Christians who have stepped out of bounds and have gone too far in using their military rank or their position to advocate the Christian faith. So the left tends to take one or two of those cases and say this is like this massive problem that every Southern Baptist in America in the military is anxious to violate the laws. This exact pattern can occur on the left. But right now, it's occurring more on the right, just because that's sort of the way things are going.
Is technology the problem?
Well, yeah. I mean, in the sense that it's so much easier. I mean, what once was an anonymous anecdote preached by one minister and put in his church bulletin, which is mailed out to his church members, that same thing now goes on the website. Somebody cuts and pastes it, puts it on Twitter, and the next thing you know, it's being handed around by people in Korea. I mean, literally in microseconds. I mean, there's a reason the word viral is one of the most important words in the world of economics and digital media. This is precisely what happens with, good grief, whatever the Kardashians are doing today. The same thing applies to conservative religious believers passing around incomplete, flawed, or twisted information about something going on in the news. It's the exact same technological process, and it's the process at the heart of the digital age.
Well, we'll take that up on the other side of the break. He's also described how news gets spread nowadays. We'll talk about that with Terry Mattingly of GetReligion.org right after this.
Issues Etc. regular guest Craig Parton will present Christianity for the Academic and the Artist as part of the Village Lutheran Lectures on Christianity and Culture. Join us on Saturday, October 3rd, 2 p.m. at Village Lutheran Church, 9237 Clayton Road in suburban St. Louis. To learn more, go to villagelectures.com. Christianity for the Academic and the Artist, Saturday, October 3rd, 2 p.m., Village Lutheran, St. Louis.
Have you been too busy to get your associate's, bachelor's, or master's degree? Concordia University, Wisconsin offers 50 online educational options. Find out more at issuesetc.org. Click the Concordia University online logo and enter the program code ISSUES to waive your application fee. Concordia University, Wisconsin is here to strengthen and support the church. Lifelong Lutheran Learning. issuesetc.org and click Concordia University, Wisconsin online.
Quality, quantity, qualified. You're listening to Issues Etc.
When the Apostle Paul stated, "I have become all things to all men," was he talking about fitting in with the world? I've written an article in the latest Issues Etc. journal titled, "All Things to All Men." You can read it by subscribing to the online Issues Etc. journal. Just click the red subscription button in the right-hand column at issuesetc.org. You can also read Pastor David Wan's story of failing to find Lutheran theology in several Lutheran churches, but finding it in Scripture and the Lutheran Confessions, the free online Issues Etc. journal.
Did you know that Luther Academy has been providing continuing education for confessional Lutheran pastors and laypeople worldwide for more than 20 years? Luther Academy publishes Logia, the Confessional Lutheran Dogmatics Series, and Luther Digest. Find out more about Luther Academy and sign up to receive their free email newsletter at lutheracademy.com, lutheracademy.com, and like them on Facebook, facebook.com/Luther Academy.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Terry Mattingly is our guest. We're talking about evangelical fish stories. Terry, before the break, you were talking about how things go viral. And I mean, that's a term for it, but you're also describing in a lot of ways how news gets disseminated via the internet nowadays. I mean, Twitter started out as simply personal updates. Where am I? What am I eating? Now it is a legitimate news service, like it or not. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, but see, once again, here's the problem. If you're on the cultural left, your paranoia level, I mean, and trust me, I know that there are some awfully paranoid people on the political left. But my point is, how cut off from you do you feel from the mainstream American press if you're on the political left? Do you feel terribly cut off from National Public Radio, the CBS Evening News, CNN, and the New York Times right now?
No, those are nice, big, warm couches if I'm in the political left.
That you occasionally might sit down on a book and it might hurt your spine a little, but you're right. You're basically falling into your comfort zone when you turn in the mainstream press. Now, if you're opposed to abortion, if you would really like to see Planned Parenthood whopped up against the side of a wall and denied their federal funding and all that money go to other types of health care for women, or, you know, you're in favor of traditional views of marriage, and at the very least you think a wedding cake maker has the right to a kind of a conscientious objector status on actually dealing with same-sex marriage services as opposed to denying service to gays in general. If you're anybody in any of those other camps, how do you feel at night when you turn on CNN, National Public Radio, the New York Times, et cetera, et cetera?
Like I'm watching news in France or something like
yeah.
that.
Yeah, as one of the readers' representatives at the New York Times said more than a decade, if you're from Texas, is the way he put it, or from other parts of the country, when you pick up the New York Times, you feel like you're reading material from a foreign culture, a culture that automatically questions whether almost everything that you hold sacred in life isn't at the very least questionable, or if not, outright dead wrong. Okay, so that's the perfect recipe for paranoia. When I was in high school, I had a huge, we don't want to talk about how long ago that was, I had a massive poster that hung on the wall of my bedroom that said, just because you're paranoid doesn't mean they aren't out to get you, which of course is a wonderful catch-22 sort of a thing. Well, just because the media doesn't take your views seriously or even treat them fairly does not mean that everything that's done by some sort of independent, rabidly advocacy right-wing press is right. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And it also doesn't help, and this has been part of my life's work, it also doesn't help that almost hardly any Christian schools of higher education in America take journalism seriously, and that we haven't created enough young people who turn into middle-aged people, who turn into editors or whatever, who work in the field of mainstream journalism. We're back to that thing you and I have talked about now for several years. My image that essentially what we're dealing with here is a blind spot that has two sides. Christians just do not respect the valid First Amendment role that journalism plays in the life of our society and in its public discourse. At the same time, for some reason, the press, or most of the mainstream press, does not seem to respect the role that religion plays in our society and its unique and First Amendment protected rights to free expression, free exercise, etc. The two halves of the First Amendment do not respect each other, do not listen to each other, and when it comes to this whole fish stories phenomenon on the internet, there's a lot of paranoid conservative people out there who are simply suckers and are going to take the bait, it seems like, every time.
So let's do a little how-to, if we could. You're sitting down after dinner. You are looking at your Twitter feed. You're looking at your Facebook news feed. You are seeing things scroll by you. You see something that sparks your attention. What steps as a consumer of news do you take from that point on, clicking that link, to make sure you're not just buying into, much less sharing, one of those evangelical fish stories?
Well, this brings us sadly back to this Ed Stetzer article. And I say sadly because Ed is almost depressed at how many people have read it. When I interviewed him the other day by telephone, he called up the article on the site and looked into the software and found that at this point, way over 400,000 people had viewed this article. Far and away, like one of the biggest things he'd ever done in his writing career. And, in fact, he said, now this thing came out weeks ago. He said, you know, in fact, right now, while we talk, 87 people are reading my article. Well, what did he say in the article? And I would recommend that people look this up. And the term he uses is FAUX News, F-A-U-X News. There was also a John Stone Street commentary on this that coined the term fish stories, that we keep falling for fish stories. An ironic thing for Christians, fish, you get it. But anyway, Ed makes some crucial points. Number one is the first thing you should do is go straight to mainstream religious media like Christianity Today, in the middle, Christian Century on the left, or on the right you would have World, or maybe even a think tank like the Beckett Fund, you know, which does so much work on religious liberty issues. Find yourself four or five religious institutions that have a more responsible approach to public life, and go find out if they're running this story. If this thing is so hot, wouldn't it make sense that it would be up somewhere on the online site at Christianity Today? Or check, like, say, a really good blog like Get Religion or the Faith blog at Washington Post, run by Sarah Pulliam Bailey. Check in on Molly Ziegler Hemingway at The Federalist. Find your five or six places that you would go to see, gosh, if this thing is so hot, surely these people will be talking about it. And lo and behold, if they're not talking about it, this is not a good time to click forward. He also argues that it's time to really learn how to read the tiny print in the URLs, at which point I placed my hand over my heart and confessed my sins on that 2008 story. We need to learn kind of what news sources tend to be more rabidly advocacy-based than others. Seeing something on the main website at MSNBC is not the same thing as seeing it on a website at NBC, let alone whatever NBC.com.co is, which is one of the fake websites that's out there. In other words, there are some basic media literacy skills that we need people to use. And above all, and this is the hardest part, because repentance is not hard even for people who claim to believe in repentance. When you make a mistake, don't just yank that thing down. Tell your readers you made a mistake. If you repeat something in the pulpit and it turns out to be totally wrong, during announcements the next week, correct yourself. Correct it on the church website. Correct it in the bulletin. Act sort of like a journalist, because the truth is, in the internet age, in the age of self-publishing, the world is full of millions and millions and millions of self-publishers who are all working without the safety net called a copy desk. And that's a problem.
Now, do Christians then, I was thinking while you were talking about this, there's a website called Snopes.com, which is essentially a fact-checking website, and there are others like it. Do Christians need to start their own one of those?
It wouldn't hurt. Now, what institution would you propose to do that?
I can't think of one I'd trust, to tell you the truth.
Well, name a cultural, conservative, traditional place with credibility in journalism.
An institution to begin a Christian/evangelical version of Snopes. What would you suggest, Terry?
I don't have a clue. And the reason is we have so few institutions that major in journalism or that have developed journalism credibility. One of the reasons at GetReligion.org that we insist that all of our writers have a significant career in the mainstream press, and our current lineup is ridiculously experienced. I mean, the most inexperienced person on the site has about 15 to 20 years experience. We are old hares when it comes to this right now. But we need to find a Christian institution that could do that, a think tank that would kind of be our Snopes. But no, I'm not going to be able to nominate one for you right now.
So when we're doing this task, is it important that, because what we're talking about here is a combination of both media bias and consumer of media bias. How do we keep ourselves aware of both of those things without falling off the paranoia cliff, like you mentioned before, where we don't believe anything we see?
Well, we must learn that even when we distrust certain media, that there are media that even if we disagree with them, they at least have high standards for accuracy. Now, the New York Times has one of the best correction desks in all of journalism. Now, these days, I may not trust the New York Times for matters of balance and even fairness on certain types of issues in the age of Kellerism, but I'll tell you one thing. You are hardly ever going to find anything printed in the New York Times that is factually inaccurate, which is not the same thing as incomplete, but inaccurate that they're not going to get back to and try to correct. It is significantly, it's very important that Christians have at least some voices in the public square, some institutions in public life, that they trust enough to interact with them in a respectful manner and with credibility where they can insist on quality control. If you look at it from the left, if something runs in a public newspaper and the gay community is upset, what normally happens, anywhere in the United States, is they will immediately call up the editor in the paper and say, could we come down and have lunch? Can we come down and talk to you about this? We disagree with something that ran in the paper the other day. We'd like to give you at least 10 people that you can interview on different sides of this issue. We would like to dialogue about it, and let's see if we can improve this in the future. That would be the approach of the mainstream gay community. When something like that happens to conservative Christians, they tend to call the editor up and say, pardon me, sir, but I wanted to call and let you know that you're going to hell, and that this article you printed the other day was an attack on everything I believe, and I think you're a vicious, and things unfold from there. Nobody calls, and we get coffee and talk about this. And by the way, the person who's mad has not called the editor 10, 20, or 30 times to compliment him or her about anything that has gone on in the paper, which is what people on the left will do. Nobody calls and says, you know, I really think you had some information there that was incomplete. Here are 20 phone numbers of authorities on this topic in our own local schools and things like that that you might want to talk to next time that comes up. And this is my cell number, and call me any hour of the day and night if you have any question about that. Do you hear, like, any difference in these two approaches?
Absolutely.
When I was in my very first full-time job in journalism in Champaign-Urbana, Illinois, the news editor, and I was like the token, very overt Christian on the copy desk. The news editor of the paper had what he called green frogs. And a green frog was someone who called him on the phone and would begin like yelling at him about God stuff. And at least once a month, if not more, this would happen. And he would place his hand over the bottom of the telephone and say, Mattingly, there's a green frog on line 2. Take it. And then they'd start yelling at me for hating God and hating Christ and hating the church and hating whatever. And, of course, I'm sitting there going, could you please tell me what story this is? What did it actually say? Well, see, that's not actually what the paper believes. The paper quoted someone that said that. And I would try to explain journalism to them. But green frog alerts were a part of my life in journalism from the very beginning. Very religious people do not respect the press. I think it's gotten better in one sense. I really do believe that more religious people understand that if they read something in the paper and there's stuff they agree with and stuff that they disagree with, and it's kind of like a 50-50 debate, that is a huge victory. But there are a lot of religious people that don't want to see anything in the newspaper bad at all about religion, faith, or whatever. There are an unusually high, sadly, tragically high number of religious believers who think journalism should be public relations. And that's a part of this problem as well.
Terry Mattingly is Senior Fellow for Media and Religion at the King's College in New York City. He's author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate, founder and editor of GetReligion.org. Terry, thanks for being our guest.
Glad to be here.
When we come back, Dr. Russell Moore is going to join us. We'll talk Christianity and culture. He's president of the Ethics and Religious Liberty Commission for the Southern Baptist Convention. Stay tuned.
Hi.
Hollywood's attitude toward Christianity, the Bible's influence on the U.S. Constitution, the decline of biblical preaching, the connection between biblical illiteracy and Western morality. You'll find these essays and more in the new book, The Word They Still Shall Let Remain, The Place of the Holy Scriptures in the Faith and Life of Confessional Lutherans. Check it out at shop.logia.org. The Word They Still Shall Let Remain, shop.logia.org.
At Redeemer Lutheran Church in Fort Wayne, we are mostly looked down upon by cool people. They're always telling us that we take ourselves too seriously. That, apparently, is the uncoolest thing on the planet. We are theological nerds. We get more incensed by bad exegesis than a group of comic book fans who find out the hero was just dreaming. Some people want us to calm down, but we aren't going to. Redeemer, Fort Wayne, haven for theological nerds.
Listen to what you want, when you want. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
Imagine SteadfastLutherans.org as the internet version of your neighborhood pub. Your neighborhood confessional Lutheran pub, that is, where the finest in Lutheran conversation is going on at every table and at the bar, sometimes contentious, but always informative and unabashedly Lutheran. We're only serving Wittenberg Ale. We even have a guy named Norm, so check us out. www.steadfastlutherans.org. We'll save a seat at the bar for you.
We know that you want to build your family on the right foundation from the very start. The foundation of Jesus Christ. Concordia Publishing House offers more than 8,000 products for churches, schools, and homes. Dedicated customer service and an experienced staff to help you focus on what matters most. Click to connect at cph.org. Concordia Publishing House. Listening, responding, providing for God's people. Concordia Publishing House. cph.org.